the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. Welcome to The Winds of Change. As is often the case on Wednesday, I'm Father Tom Coys here to wrinkle your brain a bit. And
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, it's Wednesday brain wrinkling day. God bless you all. As always, let me remind you, if you can't catch it live, Winds of Change, that is, if you can't catch the show live, please go on to Podbean. It's a popular podcast company, format, application, and look for Winds of Change show, Father Anthony Bush, and look for the Wednesday shows for Father Coy's Brain Wrinkling Wednesdays. So, with that, I'm reading a wonderful book by one of our favorite authors, Fulton Sheehan. I think many of us know the great Fulton Sheehan. What a wise and learned and prayerful and holy guy he was. It's a great tragedy that his cause for canonization got sidelined by some folks in the church. He really has touched millions of people. He certainly touched my heart and mind, and got me to love Christ and His church and strive for holiness in a big way. There's a book he wrote called Peace of Soul, and isn't that a good topic for today? There's so much angst, there's so much anxiety, and how do we understand how our faith should help us have a peace of soul, peace in our hearts, as it were, peace because we have a sense that we are connected to God. And we're on the right track, and we're following the right path. You know, that's, I think, key aspect of our peace. And when we're not on the right track, when we're disjointed with God, there is a the natural consequence of he starts his book off with the term frustration. So that's a good place to start. The frustration in our lives. And how are we supposed to analyze it? I also gotta share with you some interesting scientific work on the topic du jour, the topic of the day, and that'd be the coronavirus, of course. So I know that is certainly a cause of great anxiety for so many people. And perhaps as we listen to Fulton Sheehan, who wrote back in the 1950s this book, how we would apply it to today, I think we can, and that's what we shall. Just going into this beautiful work by Fulton Sheehan, I think it will help you understand where and how we are supposed to find peace in the soul, as it were. Okay, so let's start off. He starts off with this chapter, as I said, on the topic of frustration. So he goes like this: unless souls are saved, nothing is saved. there can be no world peace unless there is soul peace. Notice how he goes right from the personal topic of peace within our souls versus right to world peace, which is, and notice too that the phrase save your soul, which was very popular and which a lot of us appreciate because a lot of us have a sense that we could lose our soul and that getting to heaven is the essence of saving our soul. But because in our world today that most people don't fear losing their soul, the phrase saving your soul is kind of meaningless. In other words, because most people think you die, you go to heaven, God is too good of a God to allow anyone to be damned. And so therefore, the phrase itself, saving our souls, doesn't make sense to a great number of people. But I like what Fulton Sheen is doing here right at the outset, is he uses the phrase peace of soul. There'll be no world peace unless there is soul peace. And I think that does catch the attention of everyone. You say, is your soul at peace? And someone can be very secular and very atheistic and say, my soul is definitely at peace. But you have to think for now. And what does that peace consist of? Anyways, I like what Fulton Sheen does by, since he's writing in the 50s, obviously what the world is just coming off of was the Second World War, right? And he makes a good point about how those two world wars in one century changed not only the map of Europe, but changed the human being, the sense of what human nature is in itself. And that's a good place to start. He goes on to say, during World War II, St. Pius XII said that post-war man would be more changed than the map of post-war Europe. It is this post-war frustrated man, or the modern soul, who interests us in this work, in this book that he's sharing with us. He is, as the Holy Father predicted, unlike the men of earlier periods. For one thing, the modern soul no longer looks to God to find God in nature. He no longer looks to find God in nature. In other generations, man, gazing out at the vastness of creation, the beauty of the skies and the order of the planets, deduced the power and the beauty and the wisdom of the God who created and sustained that world. But the modern man, unfortunately, is cut off from that approach by several obstacles. He is impressed less with the order of nature than he is with the disorder of his own mind, which has become his main preoccupation. Boy, that's so true. And as I can update this little phrase from Fulton Sheen to today, it's certainly true that man is not impressed with order found in nature. We say that taking the example of the moral issue of homosexual acts, or even, and we can put together the artificial contraception, those kinds of acts which the church has leaned on the order of nature to guide us are kind of blown out of the water today.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
The sense that nature is where we will find God as we study it, though we must always say fallen nature, right? You can also find kind of evil within the world around us. And though evil is not necessarily the byproduct of nature, without any will, without any evil choice, evil always has to involve some kind of interaction with nature. In other words, the choice aspect of how a spirit, a human spirit or a demonic spirit, interacts with the world created by God that we will just call nature. I was riding my bicycle the other day, and as many times on beautiful trails, there are signs, and one of the signs, I think it's around, it may be just DuPage County, it might be, I don't know where it is, but I've seen it many times, where it says, bringing people and nature together. In other words, take a walk on this trail, go on a mountain trail, and you are bringing people and nature together. That sentiment, and we all know what it means, and in other words, get out into fresh air, commune with trees and animals and rivers and streams and mountains and skies and all the rest, that being part of nature. However, the sense that people are not part of nature is a consequence of what Fulton Sheen is talking about here. People are a part of nature. So whether you go to the trees or mountains or streams, humans are part of nature. You're brought together with nature every time you put your foot out of bed and onto the floor in the morning. That's nature is all that God created, and human beings are part of what God created. So we have to break that ignorance, or that the loss of the sense that God created nature and human beings are the height of that creation. So but Fulton Sheen is going into this. He's proposing a way to help the modern mind that has lost this sort of reverence for God in nature, and he's going to appeal to people's sense that their soul has not found peace or fullness of peace. And even if you're a complete secularist and you say, oh, I'm perfectly content and my soul is at peace now because I got a good job, I have fun on the weekends, I have friends, I have good hobbies, I go on nice trips and all these other things, you cannot help but question the fact that, well, when you're facing death, will your soul be at peace? And so that's why you just avoid the eternal questions altogether in order to keep your peace. And is that real and true peace? So he goes on. Let me read a little bit more of his beautiful thoughts and ideas. The change in the world since World War II, this change in our times does not mean that the modern soul has given up the search for God, but only that it has abandoned the more rational or even more normal way of finding him. Not the order in the cosmos, but the disorder in himself. Not the visible things of the world, but the invisible frustrations, complexes, and anxieties of his own personality. These are the modern man's starting point when he turns questioningly toward religion. In happier days, philosophers discussed the problem of man. Now they discuss man as a problem. I like that contrast there. Well, in my philosophy classes, we did have a class called The Nature of Man, and the problem of man is just trying to tinker with the problems we find in us, in that, with the hope and with the expectation that we can, in many ways, fix many of the problems when we understand the problems within ourselves.
Freeing that, your mind.
Is this new attitude about man himself is a problem. That's obviously seen in the radical environmental movements we see in the world today. Get rid of people and the world will be a better place because man himself is the problem. And Fulton Sheen was perceiving this back in the 1950s in this post-World War II era. And of course, when we think of the post-World War II era, what comes to mind is the greatest generation, right? We say that the people that lived through World War II fought one of the greatest wars. They won one of the greatest wars in the history of mankind. And so therefore, they deserve so much praise. And we need to appreciate their heroic fighting and all the rest. But Fulton Sheen is putting his finger on something that I've alluded to on this show and in many, many of my sermons and what have you, and that is that there were introduced in that greatest generation a few problems, and let's even call them slight problems, subtle problems, that are now growing, shall we say, and the consequences are becoming more visible, okay? So I think it's time for our first break, and I'm not going to be able to get through too much of this, but I do hope you I introduce you into reading and listening to Fulton Sheen all the more. We'll continue with this, and then I'm going to break. I got to share some very important scientific stuff about the coronavirus and the vaccine and all that crazy stuff that we're dealing with today. Anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
.org. We are the students of St. Stanislaus Koska Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Koska is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hello there, everyone. God bless you for tuning into the Winds of Change. Father Tom Coyes here. I'm sharing with you some beautiful words from Fulton Sheen on a book called Peace of Soul. And he's really putting his finger on why why we don't have peace of soul. And he's also proposing a different way of trying to get the secularists and the non-religious people back into the fullness of the faith. So this is a particularly good thing to read if you're thinking of evangelization efforts of the church and pivoting a little bit, I guess you could say, instead of a deeper philosophical approach, which quite frankly is what I've appreciated most of my life. But he's trying to take it from a psychological approach and trying to expose what a lot of secular people today probably wouldn't admit, but it can be brought to their attention, and namely that they don't have fullness of peace in their soul. Psychologically speaking, there's these great conflicts and what have you. And he points out this, especially with the well-educated, which, let's face it, many of the people who become secular and given up on Catholicism or religion in general have done so through their studies in universities and, even through high school and all the rest. But he says, if the frustrated soul is in an educated person, this person has a smattering of uncorrelated bits of information with no unifying philosophy. Isn't that the very idea of having a philosophy of life sort of unifies a lot of the information we get, which is so true. He says, such a man projects his own mental confusion to the outside world and concludes that since he has no firm knowledge of truth, then nobody can know truth. His own skepticism throws him back more and more upon those powers lurking in the dark, the dank caverns of his unconsciousness. You know, I had to say that just the phrase unconsciousness or the unconscious, it's never really taken me like so many people, but a lot of people who have fallen away from Catholicism especially become secular and then want to try to recover some sense of spirituality. And I'm actually thinking of my brother, who I love dearly, but that fits him pretty much to a T. He wanted to recover a sense of spirituality and was very fascinated because he would listen to it, and he would even go to retreats by people of a Eastern philosophy, Zen Buddhists and what have you, and they would make a big deal about the unconscious, what lurks behind your thoughts. And of course there's a great deal of difficulty in that, in knowing that how do you think about thoughts that lurk behind your thoughts, because as soon as you think them, they are no longer hidden thoughts, but they are conscious thoughts. So Fulton Sheen is putting his finger on something very fascinating here, the role of the unconscious in the educated secular person. So he goes on to say, this kind of person each day has a new idol of sorts, a new philosophy. He doesn't have one unifying philosophy, but philosophies are taken kind of like in a smorgasbord. You have a taste for this today and you have a taste for that tomorrow. Each week, he says, we'll create a new mood. And a mood is not really a philosophy of life, right? And so that knocks on the door of when we're trying to find peace in our soul, because we equate peace in our soul with being in a good mood, right? If I'm in a good mood, I have peace of soul. And I'll be the first to admit that I'm not always in a good mood. But my peace of soul is anchored in something more than my mood for that day, I guess. So he says this this kind of person, this educated secular person, has for his ultimate authority public opinion. And boy, doesn't that hit the nail on the head. Someone who doesn't want to take the church as a highest authority, or God as the highest authority, or we could say even scripture as, well, I'll say, is one of the high authorities, but not the highest authority in the sense that Protestants accept the Bible as the only authority, which I think is a sort of an oxymoron, or it's a self-contradicting principle, because as soon as you start discussing the Bible, you're going to start interpreting the Bible. And of course, interpreting always happens through people, right? So that's an awfully powerful insight in order to regain our sense of peace in our hearts. So let me just continue here with wonderful Fulton Sheehan. This characteristic of the isolated man, separated from himself and from God, this is revealed not only by the two world wars in 21 years and constant threat of a third world war. Isn't that something that he predicts that? Not only by the growth of class conflict and selfishness, wherein each man seeks his own desires and will, but also by man's break with tradition and the accumulated heritage of the centuries. The revolt of the modern child against his parents is a miniature of the revolt of the modern world against the memory of almost 2,000 years of Christian culture and the great Hebrew, Grecian, and Roman cultures which preceded them. Any respect for that tradition is called reactionary, with the result that the modern soul has developed a commentator mentality, which judges yesterday by today and today by tomorrow. A man who is not at peace with himself is not at peace with his brother. World wars are nothing but macrocosmic signs of the psychic wars waging inside microcosmic muddled souls. If there had not already been battles in millions of hearts, there would be none on the battlefields of the world. I think this is an insight that I've subconsciously, I've subconsciously, but also now consciously, have been appreciating that when you study world wars, and as a historian, you can't be a historian without trying to figure out why people fight wars.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That is brain wrinkling. One of the things that's not brought up when you study wars and why countries fight each other is the individual people involved in those wars and their inner conflicts. And do I have to spell it out? But I think it seems clear to my mind, but I think I have to spell it out, that obviously individuals' inner conflicts have a lot to do with personal relationships, right? Your personal relationships between man and woman, husband and wife, brother and sister, but obviously especially the role of man and woman and the difficulties that creates in people's lives, the romantic history of our lives is definitely part of world history. It seems crazy to say that, but that's what Fulton Sheehan is referring to here. Let's do a little bit more here on this beautiful first chapter of The Peace of Soul by Fulton Sheehan, and then we'll take a break, and then I gotta shift a little bit to what causes lots of frustration in all of us today, and that being the coronavirus. Fulton Sheehan goes on to say, our personal self-hatred always becomes hatred of neighbor. Wow, that's a mouthful. If we have a personal self-hatred because of the conflict that we inevitably have if we don't have a controlling purpose in life. And obviously religion provides a controlling purpose in life, even as we mess up life with our different sins, right? And so he's pointing out such a beautiful reason for finding peace through forgiveness, finding peace through confession, finding peace through repentance. We can hate ourselves when we dwell on the mistakes we've made, right? Once we see the mistake made, we may not see the mistake made while making it, because when we're making the mistake, we're concentrating on the benefit that it gives us. But later on, we see different consequences that are obviously traced back to the sin, to use the religious word, for an error or a crime, right? So our personal self-hatred can really carry with us for many years. And if that isn't dealt with in one way or another, it will spill over into hatred of neighbor. And so the feeling of forgiveness, the feeling of peace that comes from knowing that Almighty God can forgive us of our past transgressions even more quickly and more readily than our neighbor. again, he's pointing out that the alienation with yourself, how are you alienated from yourself when you don't have control of yourself, when you lose control of yourself when your life is not sort of directed in a very purposeful way, right? He goes on to say, communism has a special affinity for souls that already have a struggle going on inside of themselves. Oh boy, and I could just retranslate Fulton Sheen here by saying, shall we say, leftists or the real progressive liberals have a struggle already going inside of themselves. Associated with this inner conflict is a tendency to become hypercritical. Unhappy souls almost always blame everyone for their miseries. Doesn't that seem to fit the anxiety within, shall we say, the tear down the statue campaign that's, we see that Robert E. Lee was a general in the Civil War over 150 years ago. And so my personal happiness is tied to his evil. Instead of saying, no, my personal unhappiness has to do with the inner conflict that's going on in my heart now, today. Anyways, okay, well, Nick, if we're ready, let's take another break. And I'm going to change speeds here a little bit. I got to share with you some very powerful, some important scientific information about Mr. Coronavirus. Anyways, thank you for listening, my friends. You are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
We are the students of St. Stan's Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Father Tom Coyce on Winds of Change. Hey, how about that news about the expanded programming here on Winds of Change and WNDZ with the EWTN broadcasters? Some great national personalities you could tune into. So you're going to just have to set your car radio to 750 if you haven't already. I'm surprised you haven't, but if you haven't, make sure 750 is one of your car stations and in your house as well. Anyways, a lot of radio and talk shows are consumed through podcasts as well. They're not that hard to do. That's how I get most of my consumption of podcasts. So anyways, as promised, and as Fulton Sheen is talking about frustration and peace of soul, one of the things that's robbing quite a number of us of our peace of soul is the difficulties facing our health, right? And in days gone by, people who were overly preoccupied by health issues have been called hypochondriacs. Well, now it seems like we're all quite occupied with the coronavirus. So now we have a world of hypochondriacs, if we can say it that way. Is it irrational? Not really, because it's a nasty thing. We do have to listen to many of the doctors and scientists that are not on the same page as Dr. Fauci, we'll just put it that way, and so many of those kinds of doctors. I've said it many, many times, and I'll say it again. There's no way to get through life with zero risk. And maybe since we've been hearing the term zero tolerance for quite a while when it comes to dealing with problems such as sexual abuse, obviously, for one, it used to be drugs in school, but now I don't know that there's going to be zero tolerance policies given for drugs now that marijuana is legal in so many states, here in Illinois, of course, and many other things. But we've heard the term zero tolerance a lot. And we use it when we're facing a very difficult problem. And so maybe zero risk is what our brains have been conditioned to. We won't be at peace unless we find zero risk. And it just seems like it's such an irrational panacea to look for. I won't be at peace regarding COVID until we have zero risks. But speaking of risks, what the new thing that we should be paying attention to is the risks with the so-called vaccine injections that are being passed out. There's a doctor by the name of Dr. Bhakti, I think that's how he says his name. He's a immunologist and a very done a lot of work with viruses and vaccines and all the rest. But I just have to share some of this information that is not well propagated. And he asked the question, what kind of protection do the COVID shots provide? And so it's an interesting, you get the shot, you think it's the right thing to do, and I have no judgmental, I have no negative feelings about those who have got it. It seems like it was a wise decision for so many. But we need to wonder what kind of protection did the shot give you? So he says, aside from providing insignificant protection in terms of your absolute risk reduction, it's important to realize that the shots do not provide immunity. All they can do is reduce the severity of the symptoms of infection. And who doesn't want the symptoms, the severity of your symptoms reduced? That's certainly a good thing. But the point behind the point is, okay, you get through it, then you will develop an immunity. Your body naturally fights diseases. We've all known that ever since we started learning about diseases, right? But he goes on to say, these shots showed absolutely zero benefit in the clinical trials. This is ridiculousness. People don't understand that they're being fooled and have been fooled all along. Let's take the one of these Pfizer trials. 20,000 healthy people were vaccinated, and another 20,000 people were not vaccinated. And then they observed over a period of 12 weeks or so how many cases they found in the vaccinated group and how many cases they found in the non-vaccinated group. What they found was that less than 1% of the vaccinated group got COVID-19 and less than 1% of the non-vaccinated group got COVID-19. So kind of this, no difference. The difference was 0.8% to 0.1%, which really is nothing, considering the fact that they were not even looking at severe cases. They were looking at people with positive PCR tests, which, as we all now know, is worthless, plus one symptom, which could be a cough or a fever. That is not a severe case of COVID-19. Any vaccination that is going to get authorized must be shown to protect against severe illness and death. And this has definitely not been shown. So forget authorization. It can't be authorized, not by any normal means. Now, the COVID injections do not have full authorization. It's an emergency authorization, which again is absolute ridiculousness. Since we know the infection fatality rate of this disease or virus is not greater than that of the seasonal flu. John Yolandis has published these numbers, which have never been contested by anyone in the world, and they cannot be contested. If you are under 70 years of age and have no severe pre-existing illness, you can hardly die from COVID-19. So there is no fatality rate that can be reduced. And for people who are elderly and have pre-existing illnesses, as we know from Dr. Peter McClough's and his colleagues' work, there are very good means and medicines to treat this virus so that the fatality rate goes down another 70 to 80%, which means there is no ground for emergency use at this time. I neglected to follow up on Dr. McCullough's comment about 40,000 people being equally divided between injection and no injection groups in the COVID injection trials. A few months ago, they actually abandoned the non-injection arm of the trial. So, no, there is no control group anymore. So these studies were kind of abandoned, which is kind of silly. Why would you abandon? That's one of... I'm not that great of a scientist, but I always know you when you're doing experiments, you use control group versus non-control. placebo versus the actual medicine and all the rest, right? Now, Dr. Bhakti is saying too, presently the evidence of increased infection is arising after the injection. So he says, presently the Center for Disease and Control, CDC, claims that 95% of COVID infections resulting in hospitalizations are occurring among the unvaccinated. We've heard that, I'm sure. I've heard that on the news. So he's saying this is what you're hearing on the news. 95% of the COVID cases are from the unvaccinated. This, too, is a statistical fiction, Dr. Bhakti is saying, as they're using data from January to June of 2021, when most of the American public was unvaccinated. Obviously, we're getting more and more vaccinated people. And in July, August, and now September, we should reassess those numbers. So looking at more recent data, we're finding that the majority of severe cases and hospitalizations are actually occurring among those that received the vaccinations. Unfortunately, as noted by Bhakti, it's all manipulated data. And if someone wants to manipulate something and are in a position to then propagate it, you have no chance of analyzing it and telling people because we have no voice in this affair. That's kind of just saying how frustrated he is. He'll need a good dose of Fulton Sheehan's Peace of Soul, right? Disturbingly, we're now starting to see the first indications of antibody-dependent enhancement, ADE. You have to remember that little phrase, ADE, antibody-dependent enhancement, which many scientists were concerned about from the very beginning. So what we're witnessing in India, for example, and probably also in Israel, is the immune-dependent enhancement of disease. It's bound to happen. So the people who are getting vaccinated now have to be fearful of the next wave of genuine infections, whether it's COVID-19 or any other coronavirus variation, because they're all related and they will all be subject to immune-dependent enhancement. Antibody-dependent enhancement, ADE, or something similar, PIE, paradoxical.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
This is all brain wrinkling for sure. ADE and PIE refer to a condition where the vaccination results in the complete opposite of what you're looking for. Rather than protect against the infection, the vaccine augments and worsens the infection. So he explains it with this way. We got to get into antibodies versus lymphocytes. Okay, I know this is a bit technical for our winds of change, but I think we're all interested in it, and it's worth trying to follow along with Dr. Bhakti and so many others are saying. We just can't turn a blind eye to these guys. They have no real reason to lie. They're concerned about our health, and they want to see the pandemic disappear just as much as anybody else. But if the path we're taking isn't the right one, for God's sake, we should change our path. Doesn't that seem logical? So he's trying to explain a little bit about viral infection. There are two major arms of defense against viral infection. One is the antibodies that, if they are present, may prevent the virus from entering your cells. These are so-called neutralizing antibodies, which the vaccination is supposed to produce. Okay, but the antibodies are not at the place that they are needed, which is on the surface of the airway epithelium. They are in the blood, but not on the surface up of the epithelium where the virus arrives. It's part of the cell, right? pretty sure that's, that would be a simple explanation. The second arm of immune defense then comes into play, and these are the lymphocytes. Wow, we learned a new word here today, lymphocytes. We've all heard of the word antibodies, but lymphocytes are also very important. There are different types of lymphocytes, and I will simplify matters by saying the important lymphocytes are the so-called killer lymphocytes. Ooh, that's a sort of powerful phrase, isn't it? The good ones are the killer lymphocytes that sense whenever a virus product is being produced in the cell. They will then destroy the cell that harbors the virus, and thus the factory is closed, and you get well again. That is the mechanism for how we can survive viral infections of the lung. And this happens all the time. So the lymphocytes, in contrast to the antibodies, recognize many, many, many parts of the protein. And here's a key issue. So if a virus changes a little bit, it doesn't matter, because the waste products that are recognized by the killer lymphocytes remain very similar. Okay? So he's saying if a virus changes, that's what we're, when we hear all this stuff about the variations, right? The Delta variation and all the other variations that will inevitably follow from the Delta variation. So that's what viruses do. They try to avoid being killed. Isn't it interesting that the principle of self-preservation is found in nature everywhere, even in these bad things called viruses and all the other. Is that an accident, or could we, can we tell the viruses to stop wanting to live? Guess not. They are going to try to kill those things that are trying to kill them. So that's why they change. That is why all of us, and this is now known, all of us have memory lymphocytes in our lymph nodes, and the lymph node organs that are trained to recognize these coronaviruses. And whether or not a mutant is there, it doesn't really matter, because they will recognize a mutant or a variant. According to Bhakti, coronaviruses can only undergo point mutations, meaning only one nucleotide at a time can be changed. The influenza virus, meanwhile, can undergo more radical mutations. For example, a flu virus can completely change its spike protein by swapping spike proteins with other viruses that is simultaneously present. Wow, who would have thought that these little things have such brain power, right? This sort of shift.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
This is super brain wrinkling, so keep paying attention, my friends. Therefore, you will never have leaps in antigenic changes, either for antibodies or for T-cell killer lymphocytes. That's why the background immunity that evolves during the lifetime of a human being is very broad and solid. Okay, that's the immunity that happens when your body naturally fights the coronavirus. So his next little point is that natural immunity is far superior to vaccine-induced immunity, right? This is something I'm thinking about, because I personally have had the virus and I got over it, so my body has natural antibodies. But now I'm being asked, or shall I say almost forced, to get a vaccine, which could do me more harm than good. The doctor continues, one of the most egregious nullifications of medical scientific truth is the claim that the COVID vaccination confers superior protection compared to the natural immunity you get after you've been exposed to the virus and recover. The reality is that natural immunity is infinitely more superior to the vaccine-induced protection you get from these shots, which is both narrow and temporary. So of all the millions of people that have had coronavirus and have recovered, we are part of the solution to the problem. We're the good guys, and we're going to help overcome the pandemic. But so many people will say, well, if you didn't get the vaccine, you're part of the problem. And we're seeing that happen so much. So let's continue with Dr. Bakke here. The COVID shot produces antibodies against just one of the viral proteins, the spike protein, whereas natural immunity produces antibodies against all parts of the virus, plus memory T cells. The very fact that the World Health Organization has changed the definition of herd immunity is such a scandal. I'm at a loss of words to describe how ridiculous I find this all. That this is being accepted by other scientists, my colleagues, how can the physicians and scientists of the world bear to listen to all this nonsense, he says. So how the COVID shot causes damage, we have to appreciate this. We're running out of time here, but let me see if I can get the key points here. As explained by Dr. Bakke, when you get the COVID shot, genetic instructions are being injected into your deltoid muscle. Muscle drains into your lymph nodes, which in turn can enter your bloodstream. There may also be direct translocation from the muscle into smaller blood vessels. Once inside your blood vessel, the genetic instructions are delivered to the cells available, namely your endothelial cells. These are the cells that line your blood vessels. These cells then start producing spike protein as per the mRNA instructions. As the name implies, the spike protein looks like a sharp spike protruding from the cell wall into the bloodstream. Oh, you got a big, ugly picture there. Picture the inside of your bloodstream, and these little spikes come out. Since they are not supposed to be there, your killer lymphocytes rush to the area thinking the cells are infected. The killer lymphocytes attack the cells, which causes damage to the cell wall. This damage in turn provokes clot formation. We're now seeing evidence that COVID shots are causing all manner of clotting issues. Of course, when a large enough clot occurs in your heart, you end up with a heart attack. In the brain, you end up with a stroke. But even microclots that don't completely block the blood vessel can have serious ramifications. So, how vaccine-induced antibodies can cause harm. The other thing that has now emerged is just as frightening as the clotting problem. 1 to 2 weeks after the first jab, you start making antibodies in large numbers. Now, when the second jab is done, the spike proteins start to protect the walls of your blood vessels into your bloodstream. It is not only met by killer lymphocytes, but now the antibodies are also there, and the antibodies activate the complement system. Oh dear, that means we're out of time. Please check out Dr. Bakke. It's spelled B-H-A-K-D-I. B-H-A-K-D-I. Anyways, let's pray hard, my friends, that if we are making a major mistake, that we have the wisdom and the humility to change directions in our country and to fight the good fight with God on our side. For nature is from God. What's and there to say? Nature. I'm Father Tom Quinn. No, you've been listening to listener supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The